overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life. I am overflowing.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Wow. That's a profound stillness that you created there, fella. I love it. I'll take the lyrics off the floor. It's funny, the first song was Love is the Key from Tuck and Patty. I've been asking Teresa to sing a Tuck and Patty song forever, and you need the guitar player, so together they put this beautiful thing. Do you know how much your love means? Do you know how many hearts you've lifted? Do you know your love is healing? Such a beautiful feeling. Do you know your love is precious? It warms me like the shining sun. Keeps shining through the darkest season. Your life has such a perfect reason. To know yourself as the light in this world where there's so much darkness. How many of you went to the Circle of Love with me this year? Oh, a nice number. While I was there, Glenda Davis, she's the minister in Dothan, Alabama. She came up to me and she says, David, how do you help your congregation go through these dark times that we're facing on the planet right now? You know, and you know there's a lot of darkness going around. You just turn on the television, you can hear it. And intuitively, I said to Glenda, I said, you know, first we have to deal with the darkness within our own self before we can deal with the darkness out here. And when we stop running away from the darkness and we meet the darkness, you know, when I was a little boy, I used to be afraid of the darkness and they'd keep a light on in my room. And I was really afraid when you'd open the basement steps and it was really pitch black down there. And so I had to learn as a little boy to meet the darkness and to bring the light of my own awareness. And so we were talking about last week, this month we're talking about light for the theme of the month. I thought how perfect for a candlelight service to the end of the year. And even in the beautiful satsang that Glory G and I did on Wednesday night, we invited a shamanic journey where they went in to find the light within themselves. Recognizing that the light is always there, but we have to turn toward the light, even in the darkest times. And I'm so proud of my, I don't know what you call yourself, students, pupils, disciples, family members, but when I hear someone like Michael say to someone else, it's only by going through the darkness that you find the light, I think, my God, they've actually heard me. You know, they've actually heard what I've been saying all these times, that the one you're looking for, you're looking with. And if you can't meet your own darkness, if you can't meet your own fear, how can you meet the darkness and the fear in the world? It's that simple. If you can't find the love in your own heart, how are you going to find love in the other? It's never been about the other. Because the one thing we teach in the science of mind, Ernest Holmes says, if we teach anything, it's oneness. One, one, one. There is only one here. So when you know yourself as the one, that you're all a hologram of the one light, the one light needs all these different lights to help it shine. And when you do the candlelight service at the end, there's a feeling when we all come together with our candles in the air that we're all the light of the world. And first that light has to awaken within us to become self-aware, and then that light can shine itself in the world, however it shines in your life. You know, it may be a smile. I was telling someone, Trey and I walk our dogs down by Big Springs Park, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful place, and there's all the ducks there, and they have the green team cleaning it up, and I always like to acknowledge people when they're doing some service to our city, and so the man was picking up the trash, and I said, I want to thank you for all the, you know, making this park so beautiful for all of us, and he acknowledged me. I said, what happened to all the vagrant people? And he said, oh, we get rid of them. And I thought, oh, dear. I didn't expect that. I was expecting a compassionate answer from him. And then I thought, okay, I'm experiencing my little bit of darkness, a little bit of reaction. Can I still stay in that open-hearted place and go on with my day? So what if life gives you these little moments where we fall from that perfect, idyllic perception that everything is perfect, and we get to see our own judgment, our own binary mind? I'm getting closer and closer to the class, and I'll commit. You know, it's hard to commit. That's the hardest thing. One of my favorite sermons is called The Power of Commitment. Have you noticed how it's hard for people to commit to a relationship? It's hard for people to commit to a spiritual practice. It's hard for people to commit to a friendship. It's hard to commit to your exercise routine. It's hard to commit to an animal and actually make a commitment to a pet that you're going to be there. So I'm going to make a commitment to do Richard Rohr's Just This, because it's so painfully simple. In the simplicity, it's very profound. One of my students, she's not here today, she gave me beautiful feedback in the Wednesday class. We've just been doing the class, Lot Kelly's The Way of Effortless Mindfulness, and he also did a class called Shift into Freedom. And he comes from the Tibetan Buddhist kind of way of thinking. It's very, very, very brilliant. And it's a perfect class for any engineers. Any engineers out there, they usually love it because it's got these structures. You know, at the very last class, he talked about, and he says the same thing as Richard Rohr, but Richard Rohr says it in painfully simple language. He says it in very erudite language. And the first thing that they both say is, notice where you aren't centered in truth. Notice where you are triggered. Notice where your fear, your judgment, your worry arises. That's the first step. Doesn't make sense, does it? Yeah. So notice where you're triggered, where you're unhooked from the truth of your being. And then the second step, like Kelly would say, you're greater than that. As Seamus would say, not mine. As Ron Elsner would say, leave it. So the local mind is attempting to manage when this stuff comes up by saying, not mine, or leave it, or cancel clear. But what if we don't go there in the first place? We recognize, oh, there it is. It's my little mind. It's my little mind going on with its narrative. Isn't it sweet? Someone came to class the other day, and they said they were in a funk. And I said, oh, is there anything I can help with? And to the wisdom of that student, they said, well, you know what? I'm sitting with my funk, and I'm talking to my funk. And my funk has given me messages. I said, oh, here's another one that heard me. It's not about getting rid of the funk. It's not about getting rid of the shadow. But know that you're greater than that. And you can bring that light of awareness to anything that appears dark or sticky or fearful. And by the willingness to hold it, like a mother holding a child, that child is held. And pretty soon, after a while, that neurotic tendency falls away. Now, last Sunday, I shared with you on the eve of my birthday that Trey and I were walking the dogs through Blossomwood. It's the Saturday walk. We've been doing it for 13 years. Jane's been on the walk, and it was Baby Speck's favorite walk, and she's no longer with us. So we got out of the car last week, and as Jody reminded me, there's so many lookalikes out there. This lady was running with her headset on, totally oblivious to the sounds of the world, and she's running with a dog that was the spitting image of a young Baby Speck and Bert Caesar, my male dog, who was so in love with her, and he started howling and howling and howling. And she kept going, oh, oh, you know, you'd think after a year and 3 months he'd be over it, but he was not over it. So this Saturday, she was running. She's got her routine down at 7 a.m. She's running the dog. It's young. And there she is running down in Blossom Woods with this dog. But this time she didn't have her hearing set on. And Bert saw Baby Speck through this other dog, and he started the same howling. But this time, the woman heard him, and she stopped. And I said, excuse me, I'm sorry that my dog is howling, but your dog is the spitting image of the love of his life. Would it be possible for him to see that it isn't her, that it is this other four-legged? And she said, you know, my dog's kind of unstable. I don't know what she's going to do. I said, you know, Baby Speck was unstable. Bert knows what to do. He's just
a good old guy. He just walks over, and he went over there, and he sniffed, and he looked at her, and his tail started to wag. Well, it isn't her after all. She looks just like her, but she's cute as pumpkin pie, he said.
And I said, well, you can go on there. And that's essentially what we do. When this stuff comes up, it's not meant to be said, get over. It's meant to say, how can I hold this in a loving way so that harmony can reestablish itself in our world? It's funny, Mark Nepo has this beauty, he quotes Plato. And Plato says, we're born whole, but we need each other to be complete. That is one of the most profound statements I've ever heard. We're born whole, but we need each other to be complete. Now, a flower is born whole, but a flower needs a bug to pollinate it, doesn't it? I I gave Gigi and Raul our lemon tree because it got way too big for our home, and Trey had it in the greenhouse at his school. And when he retired, we had this enormous lemon tree, and Gigi had a big room. And so it's been growing there well, but I've missed the lemons. And so last year, I got Trey a little lemon tree. And that little lemon tree had some blossoms, and it's filled with blossoms, and it's sitting in the dining room. And when you come over for the World Peace Meditation, you'll sense that the house is so fragrant. It's filled with lemon blossom bloom smells. And I was up in the shower, like Tia, and I noticed there was a bug in the shower. But unlike Tia, I didn't scream. I went and got the bug. Well, Tia, listen to this. I went and got the bug, and I carried it down to the lemon tree. Because I realized the lemon tree needs a bug in order for those little blossoms to have little lemons. And this year we got one lemon, just one lemon. And you know when you get a whole bag of lemons, but you have one special lemon that came from your lemon tree? Lemon tree, very pretty, and the lemon flower is sweet, but the fruit of the poor lemon is delicious to eat. I changed the lyrics on that. That little lemon tasted better than any lemon I've ever had because it came from our own tree. So what if we need each other? We need each other to be complete. I'm a gardener, and I have lots of seeds and lots of bulbs, but those seeds and the bulbs would be nothing without the earth and the water and the sunlight to grow in. I got my board members, I'll tell you now, I got you all amaryllises, and I love doing this. And so I got the amaryllises, and I got a sixth one for Al Underbrink because he's back there and he doesn't know how to keep things alive. But anyway, But all those amaryllis came home with me, and they said, put me in a nice big pot with some beautiful soil and give me some light. And so now they're all sitting in a well-lit place, and they're all putting their roots down, and they're getting ready to express themselves. What if something as simple as a flower is preaching a gospel of who we are here to be? We need each other to be complete. So, you know, there's a sign in our classroom out there, as life goes, so goes the Sangha. And it's a little calligraphy by Thich Nhat Hanh that one of my students brought back from having been at a week retreat with him. Thich Nhat Hanh in the Buddhist tradition, and you know this if you're in the recovery group, they teach the four refuges. You take refuge in the Buddha consciousness, which is the awakened presence within. You take refuge in the Dharma, which are the teachings. The teachings. One of the Buddhist teachings is to be a light unto yourself. In the Christian teaching, they say, don't put your light under a bushel, but let it shine. In the Jewish tradition, they say, in the very first pages of the Bible, in the beginning, darkness was on the face of the earth, and God said, let there be light, right? So what if darkness is the face? And the word that they use in the very beginning of the Bible is Shekinah, which is the light within. Ah. So all the great world's teachings are pointing to this light. In this lovely little symbol over here, you can't really see it. There's a crescent moon and a five-pointed star, which is the symbol of Islam. And the crescent moon represents you and me as a reflection of the one light. What does the moon do? It reflects the light of the one. The five-pointed star represents the one light. And so in that symbol, it's, are we receptive to this light that comes from the divine that moves through us and radiates out in the world? They're all pointing to the same thing, but it doesn't mean anything unless it becomes embodied. Now, over in the second window, that's the Sufi symbol, and it's the winged heart. Yeah, you can see the winged heart. It's one of my favorite ones. Virginia Burroughs did all of these. These are the yantras of the world religions. Now remember, a yantra is a symbol that points to something greater than the conceptual mind can grasp. That's why artists need experience and inspiration for them to create the beauty that they create. I've got several paintings of my garden in the house that Tia painted. And it's not going to look like my garden at all, but it captures the light of the garden, the soul of the garden. And so, the artist needs the person to experience it to have a direct experience. So the symbol of the winged heart, it takes this symbol even further. The wings represent spirit and body, or you might think surrender and trust. And in all the Egyptian iconography, and Trey and I went to the museum and toured all the some wonderful art there, and they have a place in there where they show Egyptian art, and they have wings on the gods that go to heaven. So the winged thing is to take this, and it comes through the open heart. This is the Sufi symbol. And in that open heart, there is the crescent moon and the five-pointed star. So this is a symbol that's saying when our heart is open to the love of the divine, it shines its light through us. That's what the Tuck and Patty song was essentially saying. Because the world needs your love. It needs your light. And we need each other to spread it in the world. When I was a dancer, Anna Halperin was one of the teachers I studied with in San Francisco. And she had a thing called collective creativity. And she recognized that in improvisational dance, one dancer can do something, but you get a bunch of dancers there and you give them all the tasks to express and they mirror one another and the creation is so much greater. So when two or more are gathered with the intention to let the light shine, that's what happens in communities. That's what happens in sanghas. That's what happens in satsang, which is a coming together in truth, the truth that reveals itself as it is in this moment. And you know, it's always fresh. You never step in the same stream twice. So what's revealed at this stage of your unfoldment is going to be different than 30 years down the line where I happen to be. Some people want this enlightenment thing and they want it fast. But what if it takes a lifetime, maybe lifetimes, in order for this light to reveal itself? And the only way it's going to is first we have to meet, they all say it, where we're stuck, where we're blocked, where the egoic mind seems to think it's in charge. And in this last class, he was very helpful for me because he showed us our egoic mind. And the egoic mind has three aspects, which I find very revealing. There's the manager. How many have a really good manager in their life? You manage your things. You've got your checklist. You're really in control. The manager wants to be in control, not only of themselves, about everything in the world. Then you have these exiled parts of yourself that we all do, that were shamed when we were young. That's what holds the magic. That's your little child that is spontaneous and free and creative and imaginative, that wants to play spontaneously, that can play with a two-year-old and see the light even in their terrible two-stage. So could we let those exile parts come out? That's been a big one for me because I was truly repressed and shamed as a little boy. And then the last part of the egoic mind, he said, is the firefighter part. That's the part of you that you use when there's a challenge in life. Tia's got a great firefighter, you know. She went down and saved an animal the other day. She marched right down there, and I love that firefighting ability. But you get to a stage where you don't need the firefighter so much anymore because you're not putting out fires. Ah, there's a thought. You're not putting out fires. Let me give you a little Mark Nepo. He's one of my great heroes, and he talks about the light as well. And he talks about our little inch of light. And he started off by quoting Plato, who you need to be whole, that we're born whole, but we need each other to complete. And he talked about the flowers and the seeds. That's where I got that idea from. And then he says, the paradox is especially true of the light that we carry inside ourselves. He says, some call this inner light spirit or soul. In the seat of the soul, Gary Zukav talks about everything is infused with soul. Now, we humans want to exclude the animals and the plants and the trees and say that, no, it's only the humans that have a soul. But when I went to the St. Francis Center in Arizona, they had these beautiful pieces of art on the wall that said, all pets go to heaven. Now, the Christians don't, the Protestants don't believe that, but the Catholics do. So I said, I'm going to be a Catholic for a little while and know that all these pets have souls too. And in Gary Zukav's Seat of the Soul, he said, everything is infused with soul, not just the humans. So he said, some call this inner light spirit, some call it soul, other call it grace, but we can simply call it this eternal aliveness that's within us. I gave Jody a little photograph of a dear friend of ours, Vandana Srivastava. I have these little cards when she made her transition. And there was a photograph maybe 6 months before she'd passed. And every time I look at that, I see the light shining through her eyes, a light that's still here. Jody spoke about coming to the center when her friend Lindsay made her transition. And I said to Jody, as I said, that Lindsay's still here. Some of you can hear that with an open heart. Some of you take umbrage. No, they're gone. They're gone. But their essence is here. Their light is here. The light doesn't go anywhere. It says in physics, energy cannot be created or destroyed. It just changes its form. So when we start knowing ourselves as a light being, wow, when Rumi made his transition, he says, don't grieve the loss of me. He said, this is my wedding day. I'm returning to the light of the one. Isn't that a beautiful way to think of that? So, going on to Mark Nepo, he said, each being born to life is like a simple wooden match with its phosphorus tip. We have the lighted fire within us, and we carry it everywhere we go. The nature of living as spirit on earth is just that, like the simple match. We enter the days needing to strike or be struck against the things of the world in order to ignite our aliveness. So how do we determine the kind of life that we live? In the ministerial class, I think I've taught four of them now. Wanda Gale and I would always start them with a little video, and it's called Match Scratch Fever. You can Google it up online. And it's a cartoon, and it's about a box of matches. And all of a sudden, the box of matches is moving, and it opens, and out pops this little wooden match with this big phosphorus top. And he's looking around life, but he realizes his life has no meaning unless he gets it lit. And so he's struggling with that box, and he's struggling with that box, and he bumps up against it. And finally, in his struggles, he gets lit. And he's dancing, and he's burning, and he burns until he's all burned up. Let those who have ears to hear, hear. So what if we're here to burn brightly? Not to be a dimly lit little match, but to burn brightly. He goes on to say, there is no getting around the fundamental fact that we need to interact with everything in order to manifest the wholeness that we are born with. So sometimes we do the striking, and sometimes we're struck. Huh. So coming here on Sunday mornings, coming to satsang and to class, you're consciously striking your match. You're consciously awakening to this light within. But then sometimes life gives you those moments. Now, my beloved husband has been diagnosed when he had the anxiety attack that he has Asperger's syndrome, and he tends to react. And so we were driving down the road the other day at Five Points where the lights aren't really consistent, and he has it difficult when the lights aren't. And so we're sitting at a red light, and I could see he's getting impatient. And he says, so what are you teaching in that class anyway? So I'll just say this, Trey. At the end of the class, you're here to be filled with patience. These are the end results. Compassion, acceptance of what is, and gratitude. He says, that doesn't work for me. Well, whatever it is. So when life gives you a turning signal that isn't turning, a natural patience, when you're no longer the impatient ones, will start to meet that. An acceptance that this is what it is. The lights here are kind of fakakta, you know? There's a compassion for my own suffering self that tends to want to react. And then there's gratitude that at least I have the awareness not to let this little thing pull me off center, that I can keep my light shining and my smile going. So he goes on to say, the mysterious difference between a wooden match and the dormant spirit we carry within us is that the light we carry can be lit more than once, unlike the match. And in truth, the more we lean into life, the more we authentically interact with the world, the brighter becomes our flame. Especially those things that are a little uncomfortable. You know, we're going to do the generational healing this Wednesday, and it can be an uncomfortable experience. When we did it at Banning Mills at the Circle of Love, people like Lisa Ferraro thought maybe these people who come for this love event aren't ready to experience this unhealed darkness that arises. And yet I feel, if anything, the Circle of Love has to be that holding space that allows that darkness that was exiled to come to the surface, to be held, to be met, to be integrated. And when it's integrated, then we're no longer being operated on subversively by this unhealed aspect of ourselves. That's the whole purpose of all of this. So he goes on to say, the more we lean into life, I read that, no one knows how this works, just that it does. Same thing with our generational healing. Every spiritual tradition affirms this. Our honest meeting of experience in anything is the key to finding our light. We find the light that's already there when we don't run away from those uncomfortable experiences that life presents to us. You know, Seamus just came back and putting his mother into assisted living. I know that Kelly's mom is going through some challenges. My partner's sister is going through some mental, emotional challenges. And what if we're called to be that space to meet that? Not to fix it, not to control it, not to take it to the manager or the firefighter or the exiled parts. And maybe some of those exiled parts will come up in the course of all that. Could we be compassionate, accepting, grateful, and patient with ourselves and with them? It's real kind of simple stuff, isn't it? Sounds complicated, but it isn't. Lastly, he said, it is interesting that there are two types of matches. There's the safety matches, which we can strike only against a specially prepared surface. And then there are the strike anywhere matches, which can be struck against any solid surface. And herein lies another dangerous truth about our way in the world. If you only want your match struck in a safe place, then you're living far too small with the universe. But if you can let your match be struck when you're at a stoplight and you're experiencing overwhelming impatience and judgment, those simple moments can be transformational for you and for the whole world. You know, one of the Karen Drucker songs is, "We'll change the world one heart at a time." And when the heart is lit up from the divine love, can you imagine? Because then that light comes in and you see it everywhere in the world. It was Brooke Medicine Eagle. I do a lot of research and I kind of cull out what I want to use, but she had this lovely idea that we're all holograms of the one light, that the same divine light shines within all creation. It shines within the trees, within the bug in your shower. It shines in the lizard. It shines in the rocks that we hold. It's all illumined with this light from within. I was listening to John O'Donohue, and last week I spoke about him, and he talked about quarrying the light or harvesting the light. And he says, and when you've lived a long life and you've gone through some experiences that may not have been as comfortable, you know, he says, you harvest a very precious light. If you've known death, you harvest a precious light to get through that. And that takes you into a dialogue that what didn't die. And then that precious light that you've harvested, you can bring it into when you need it. If you've been through a relationship breakup, and how many have been through relationship breakups, and you found that breakup really took you to an understanding of who you were. And so when it comes along, as they inevitably do, and a relationship falls away, you have harvested that light that empowers you to know that that was in your life for a purpose, and it gave a clarity, and it served something much deeper. Then everything truly becomes for us and not against us. What did I have this guy say? Oh, this is the simplicity of the way he teaches. He says, St. Francis of Assisi, 1184 to 1226. How many of you have been to Assisi? It's one of the most beautiful little cities in Italy. And Trey and I hiked up the little path where St. Francis lived in the caves. And there's even a cathedral where his remains are there. And you can't but feel his presence there when they ring the old church bells. And this is St. Francis over here, by the way. We have St. Francis, we have Shiva. And this image of Shiva was given to me by Jack Albright many, many years ago. And Shiva was the Hindu god that when they threw something at him, it turned into a flame of light. So he represents the light entering into the world. Remember, these are just symbols. Symbol of St. Francis holding the animals and the birds. The symbol of the Buddha with the light within. The symbol of Ganesh. Huh. Symbol of prosperity and easygoingness. And, you know, you need an elephant's head on every now and then to laugh at yourself. So St. Francis, he knew that if we can accept that the finite manifests the infinite and that the physical is the doorway to the spiritual, then all we need is right here and right now. We don't need anything else, to just know that the divine needs you and me to shine its light in the world. He said, this is the way to that. This is the way to that. And heaven includes earth, and earth reveals heaven, and time opens up to the timeless. He talks about the eternal now moment, and in the eternal now moment, we get to harvest memories of the divine. We get to reflect on possibilities for the future. We don't have to be stuck in this instant, because the now contains it all. That's called universal time. So the earth reveals heaven, time opens up to the timeless, space opens up to the spacelessness, and if we can only recognize them as the clear doorways that we are, it is then an entirely sacramental universe. An entirely sacramental universe. What is a sacrament? You see that it's holy, that everything is holy now. He starts off his little book by saying, for truth to reveal itself, it has to shock you. And so he goes on at the very beginning of the book to say Moses was shocked when in all his studies in Midian, he'd been there for 40 years. He'd been in Egypt for 40 years. So if my math is correct, he's 80 years old when all of a sudden the bush lights up from within. And the bush says, take off your shoes, Moses, right where you stand is holy ground. The bush was not consumed by the flame. So did the bush all of a sudden illuminate itself? No, the bush was on fire with spirit all along. He was just able to see it. Elizabeth Barrett Browning says the whole world is aflame with spirit. He's saying the same thing. And those who are ready, just like Moses, take off their shoes, take off that limited idea, and the feet represent understanding, and they can see. And what did the bush say? Right where you stand is holy ground, Moses. Wow. Right where we stand, you're experiencing the wholeness of your being. So when that light starts to awaken, could we court it? like a lover. You know, maybe it happens. We did our beautiful satsang on Wednesday night, and she brought Jack and Catherine, her two beautiful children. And when it ran after the journey that we took, we go around the circle and pass the talking stick, and her little son, well, her daughter Catherine said, "I see the love, I see the light in my mother's eyes." I remember I said, "I saw the light when Catherine came to the door, and that radiant face of hers is looking at me. I could see the light within her meeting the light within me, light upon light, Noor ala Noor." And when we went around the circle and we came to sweet Jack, who's now 7 feet tall, I think. I met him when he was 3 feet tall. And Jack said, "I found the light when I came to the center." And it just touched my heart. So what if we find the light, where we find the light, when we find the light? And oftentimes it's not in the most comfortable experiences. Sometimes it's the darkness that brings us to the light. You know, and so when the darkness comes, could we not run away from the darkness, but herald it as part of the, as the doorway to who we are? So let me do a little image thing. If you want a whole journey, you're going to have to come to satsang, because Gloriji's got the rattles and the drum and the incense and the candle lights. And there's something about lying on the floor and opening your heart up to that which is already there. And so I invite you to just maybe place your hand on your heart. The Sufis call it the cave of the heart, wherein God lies. And if we can transfer the idea of God to just a radiant light. So what if this light wants to shine itself through our open-hearted awareness, not through our conceptual mind? The mind is a wonderful tool. It serves. But the mind is the part of us that gets stuck in binary thinking, right and wrong, good and bad. You know, and as it says in the Bible in the very first chapter, if you eat from the tree of judgment, you will be exiled from the garden. So if you live in the head that's always wanting to judge right and wrong, you can't be in the place that knows oneness. So for the simplicity of this little visualization, we're just going to take our attention out of the mind with all of its qualities, and we're going to rest in the heart mind, a part of us that knows, even when we don't know, in our head. Just like little Jack knew that he had found the light when he came here, it's because the light was calling him to itself. And when we find the light, then can we commit to that light? There's that C word again. Can we commit to this part of ourselves that is deathless and eternal? This light that guides our way when we get lost? This light that shows us that we're here to strike it up against the experiences of life so that we might burn brightly in the world? Not hiding our light under a bushel or backing off into the corner, but letting that light shine through our eyes, through our smile. Like it's saying in that beautiful Tuck and Patty song, "The world needs your love, the world needs your light." Could we be generous enough to offer it to the world in service to the same light that we all share? And so be like the lilies of the field, or be like the flower that opens. And as you open, be like the bumblebee that drinks the nectar from the flower, knowing that the bumblebee needs the nectar from the flower to survive, and the flower needs the pollination from the bumblebee to produce life. And so, yes, we're born complete, but we need each other to be whole. I changed that a little bit. We need each other to be complete. We need each other to see the light, to hold each other, to reflect back to each other the beauty that we see. And so when we say every Sunday morning, Namaste, we're saying the light in me sees the light in you. We're saying the love in me sees the love in you. We're saying the eternal reality of beingness itself sees the eternal reality of beingness, because in truth, we are the same. There is no hierarchy. There is no you and me. There is only that. How profoundly sweet it is. And so when baby Bert sees baby Speck, it's the light in him that sees the light in her. He confused it for the form. And when he was clear, it was just light upon light, Noor ala Noor. Then all is well. So we come here to discover what we are and to let this light shine in all directions. And when we see a vagrant person, we don't want to get rid of them. We want to see them for who they are. And in our knowingness, know that divine grace is flowing in their lives. It's all us, and it's all how we see the world. So we have a new operating system that we're creating here at the center. An operating system based on love, based on open-hearted awareness, based on the Christification of humanity, based on the Buddha awakening within time and space, no longer as a man that lived 2,000 something years ago, but as an awakened presence that is alive and well in each one of us. And through life's experiences, we have quarried that light that will lead the way through the darkness. And when the darkness comes, we invite it in, because the darkness is always heralding the light. One of my students in the Wednesday class, taken through a glimpsing process, saw the effigy of a giant tree as his symbol for oneness with God. And as he rested with that giant tree, all of a sudden a light started to shine through the tree. Another one of my students, in reflecting on the light and the presence, saw the ocean. And as she's standing at the waves of the ocean, all of a sudden the light started penetrating the waves, and she started experiencing the light within the ocean. So what if the light is courting us through trees, through oceans, through friends, through smiles, through our pets, through our neighbors, through the very act of being here on Sunday morning? And when we glimpse this light in all directions, we know that the light has come home to itself, no longer exiled in that fearful dark place, but it has come out into the world to be seen, to be known, and to be shared. With great patience, with an abiding acceptance of what is, with compassion overflowing, and with a deep gratitude, we witness the one in the many, and the many in the one. One light, one life, one love, and we are that. Take a deep breath. Give a sigh for the divine. Well, thank ya. That was fun.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. More information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.
To create a brand new world.